Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you very much to our sponsors. Number one, Alan Debbie Kay, commemorating the yahrzeit of Debbie's mother, Chava Shein Lo Bas Tzvi, the 8th of Nisan, and Rita and Joe Schickman, sponsoring the Shir Lezecher Nishmas, Joe's mother, Geula Bas Yosef, on the 14th of Nisan, Shem Shav and Aliyah, and the learning should be a zchus for the Neshamas and for all of Klal Yisrael. Okay. I don't know yet the status of next Thursday. We're going to play it by ear, but we'll put a message in the group. I would like for the shiur to continue, but we'll see what's going on in the community and other factors. But Mirza Hashem, if we can pull it off, that's the plan. What's that? We'll see. Okay. We're on Mem Zayin Beis, 47B. 47b. The last thing we spoke about at length was Zimun with Am Aretz, and we spoke about Tevel, Midrabanan, and we are now on the right before the lines get very wide. Hashamish Achol Pachos Mikazayis, the second to last medium sized line. Hashamish Achol Pachos Mikazayis, the Mishnah said at the very end of the Mishnah that if the waiter, even though normally the waiter may have the prerogative to join a group of two people who are eating at a table, even without their permission, in order to form a zimun, that is provided that he ultimately has a kazayis. If he has less than a kazayis, so then he cannot be a part of the zimun. It can't be number three. Pshita. Where it says that's obvious, right? You always need to have a kazayis, because if you don't have a kazayis, you can't bench. So what's there to talk about? So Gemara says, you're right. I did the Tana Resha kazayis, Tana Seifa, Bachos Mikazayis. Since the Resha said that the Shamish can join when there is a kazayis, so then the Seifa comes to teach you that you can not join the Zeman when there's less than a kazayis eaten. But again, not because there's any particular chiddush, but sometimes the structure of the Mishnah was such, in order to make it easy to memorize and easy to categorize, they would sometimes reformulate a similar halacha at the end in order to maintain that parallel format. Okay, but there's no chiddush to be taken from it. The next line does have a very important chiddush. Hanachrin mezamnen alav. The next line of the Mishnah, we're on the last line of the medium lines, moving on to the wide lines on Mem Zayin and Beis, for all of us, all of you joining us online right now. Pshita, isn't it obvious that a Nachri is a non-Jew, of course a non-Jew can't join the Zimun. He's not obligated to bench, so we cannot incorporate him into our collective obligation. So Hachamai Eskina, what exactly are we talking about over here? When the Mishnah comes to tell you that you cannot include a Nachri, it's not talking about my neighbor Chris. Of course my neighbor Chris cannot be included in the Zimun. We're talking about a Ger Shamal Velo Tavel. We're talking about a convert who's still in the midst of the process of conversion, and he was Mal Velo Tavel. He had a Bris Milah already, but he did not have the Tevilah. Okay? That is a very particular order. We do have the Milah before the Tevilah. We do have the Bris take place before the Mikvah. I believe the Rishonim say explicitly, because that after the mikvah, you know, that's when he really, I'm sorry, after the bris milah, he's really put to the test if he wants to continue to go through with it, right? We never make it too easy. We are reluctant to accept the convert. So after the bris milah, he may have his second thoughts, and it would be a deterrent for someone who wasn't 100% sincere.
No, this came up early 1900s. Do you have to be machal?
Yes, okay, all right. You want to get the share?
No, I know you're getting that. 100%,
100%. Okay, Sam is bringing up a very important point. We'll get to it in 1 second. So Ger Shemol Velo Tavel, a Ger who did the first of the two. It's not really two. It's actually three steps in the process. The three steps in the process are Mila, Tefila, and Karbon. In time of the Beis Hamikdash, you also had to bring a Karbon. Karbon cannot be brought nowadays. But nevertheless, we can still accept a convert because the Pasuk says that these are the rules for conversion, Ledoro Seichem. So the Gemara understands that the purpose of adding the word Ledoro Seichem for your generations is to imply that even in a time where Karbonos are not an option, we'll still be able to go through with the conversion nonetheless. But if someone converts nowadays, Mir Tashem, as soon as the Beis HaMikdash is B'mehir Rabbi Amenu rebuilt, then this will be on his list of deductions. He's going to have to bring a Karbon to the Beis HaMikdash when the opportunity presents itself. Okay? There's a lot of people. There might be people in this room who have Karbonos that they are destined to bring. A woman has to bring a karbon after she, that's this week's parsha, Yishaki Sazria. So after she gives birth, she has to bring a karbon in the Beis HaMikdash. If for whatever reason she can't bring it after the first child, and nowadays, a woman can have several children before the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, so she'll bring one and that will permit her to eat karbanos. That's the need for the karban is to eat karbanos. You cannot do so until you eat karbanos if you gave birth or other types of tumah. The ger, though, will have to wait to bring the karban, but the conversion process is okay. So there's three components. Nowadays, we only do two, but there's one more component, which is almost obvious. In addition to bris milah and tefillah, he also has to accept the mitzvahs. Okay? And at each stage in the game, when we perform these procedures, well, literally, as the ger is in the mikvah and his head is sticking up and he's about to go under, the rabbi goes through all the questions. Do you accept this and that and this and that and all the other basics of Judaism, and then he dunks in so that the tefillah will be with Kabbalah's all mitzvos. So the Gemara says that a ger shamo v'lo tavel, if he did bris milah and he did not do the mikvah yet, Amar Reb Zeira, Amar Reb Yochanan, la'olam eino ger ache yimol v'yitbol. He is not a ger until he does both the milah and the tefillah, v'kamad lo tavel nachrihu. And as long as he has not dipped in the mikvah, he is still not Jewish. Now, that's a machlokas tanoim. If you look in Yevamos, the Chachamim disagree with this, and they say that there is a significance to someone who has done only 50% of the process. But we accept this opinion that until the bris and the milah are done, it's tantamount to zero. Okay, it actually says in Shulchan Aruch we paskin that let's call this guy. We don't want to call him Chris anymore. I don't know what should we call him. I don't want to call him Chaim. You know, he's not quite there either. But he's this halfway Chaim. So what if he touched your wine? Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch, oh no, that's right. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch says he still has the status of a non-Jew, and it would prohibit the wine that he touched. Okay?
What's the status of his bris milah? It's a guy doing a bris milah.
He's doing the process of the bris milah. But you're right, it doesn't have the full significance until he's Jewish. You know?
Is there a bracha?
Yeah, so there actually is a bracha. I believe the Mole makes a bracha, though.
Yeah,
okay? Just and Mole usually makes a bracha, but, you know, by regular bris also, but that... But in theory, the father might. But it's important that you ask that because, let's say Chris, Mamish Chris, he wants to have a circumcision. He wants to do the mitzvah bris milah. Doesn't want to convert. He wants to have a bris milah. He gets a mitzvah. The Rambam writes, a non-Jew can volunteer to do a mitzvah. Maybe not Shabbos. Maybe not. Torah. Talmud Torah. He can't observe Shabbos. That's what we're going to get to in a second, as Sam pointed out. But bris milah is something that he can... I once got a call from the top of Masada. A former student of mine was leading a birthright trip. And the birthright application, you know, basically accepts anyone who's Jewish by any definition, even from your father's side, not from your mother's side. So the guy, they go up to Masada as part of the trip, and they daven vasikin as the sun rises. And there's this guy who asks him to put on tefillin. And he calls me up. He's like... I don't know. I don't think he's Jewish. His father's Jewish. His mother's not Jewish. So I said, okay, but he can volunteer to do a mitzvah, even as a non-Jew. He's allowed to, maybe you wouldn't make a bracha with him, right? Maybe it would not be appropriate to say, Asher Kedeshanu, but mitzvah sov v'tzivanu, but to do the mitzvah, he can do
a
mitzvah.
Where were you at the time? In Israel, or were you
here? No, I was in YU. no. Oh, yeah, where was I? I was in Washington Heights.
Yeah. What time was it?
Five, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night? He called me 5 a.m. My Talmidim know they can call me any time of the night. Oh. You know, that's I don't know if the Baal Batim and Hilchos know that, but yeah.
Okay, I understand that Mara talking about a waiter because like 8 million waiters.
Okay.
How many
guys are like
that are in that you know about? That's a convert that had the bris and didn't have.
Okay.
I mean,
you're right. It would probably be the sponsoring rabbi who'd invite him over for Shabbos, you know, while he was still in the process. Okay. Reminds me of a great story. After the conversion goes through, so we try to if the individual who undergoes the geiris doesn't have anywhere to go for Shabbos, doesn't have a family, so you know we try to set them up and integrate them into the community. So Rabbi Schwartz from the West Side, so he's very involved in conversion and sponsors Rabbi Alan Schwartz. A lot of people come through in the city to convert with him, and so he tells a story about a woman who. Who he set up a Shabbos lunch meal, and then she came to shul for mincha, and he asked her, so how'd it go? How was the meal? So she said, Rabbi, you have to tell me. I'm very worried. Said, what happened? How bad could it have been? He said, if the people at the table speak lashon hara, okay. Is the food still kosher? There's a big musser from that story.
So he knew the
gerus was good. Yes, he knew the gerus was good. There's a big mussar for all of us in that story. Okay, we have to think about that. Okay, so it happened. Okay, the point is sometimes I would venture to say that sometimes what we're trying to explain over here is not so much because of how frequently this is going to happen, but it's a way that the Tanayim found a way to inject a principle which may have other applications, like if he touches your wine, okay, I don't care if he wants to join my mezuzah or not, okay, but I do need to know what happens if he touches my wine, okay? Or a more extreme case would be what if he calls Hatzalah and he wants someone to be Michal Shabbos to save him? So, again, this is a little bit of a tricky question. Nowadays, whoever calls Hatzalah, they're going to answer the call. What's that? Right now we don't differentiate because it would be very bad if in the papers, you know, on Sunday morning it said that there was an emergency room doctor who wouldn't treat a guy in LIJ. Okay, but in theory, we only extend the heter pikuach nefesh to a Jew, not to a non-Jew. And there were definitely periods in history where that was, again, we'll tell them to call, 911 and, NY, the fire department, the EMS, they'll send someone, but the hotel won't deal with it. So that's one question, but let's start with the question that Sam brought up. This is a question that goes back maybe about 150 years. There was such an individual, a Ger Shamal Velo Taval, in Yerushalayim. And one of the rabbis in Yerushalayim told him, you must be Machal Shabbos. Just like, as you mentioned, anyone who's not Jewish, because they're not allowed to keep Shabbos, has to do something, even if they're a Geirus candidate and they're going to convert next week, but in the interim, so we tell them to write their name or something, do something little on Shabbos that would be a malacha, and that's the way we circumvent that issue. I have a great Yitzhahara to tell the joke about. Okay, but, yeah, okay, I don't need to say it. It's like the comedian's number 35. Okay, okay. If you don't know this, all right, I got to tell it. There are two guys, the Chavrusas for many years, and one of them said, Reuven says to Shimon, Shimon, I'm marrying off a daughter. I would love if you'd come to the wedding and be one of the witnesses under the chuppah. So he says, Reuven, I'd love to, but I got to tell you something. I'm not Jewish. He's like, you're not Jewish. You've been davening the shul here for 10 years. We learn chavrus daf yomi every single morning. What do you mean not Jewish? He's like, I find the davening very inspiring, and Judaism is really beautiful, but I'm not Jewish. What can I tell you? I come to shul, come to learn. So he said, I don't understand. That means you have to violate Shabbos every week. He's like, yeah, I keep my keys in my pocket, but what do you mean? We have an Erev. I don't hold to that Erev. Good. Okay. All right. Enough jokes. So the Gemara says that he's not Jewish. So this individual in Yerushalayim, he was a Ger Shamol Velo Taval, and he asked, do I have to, keep a key in my pocket? Do I have to do something that is a violation of Shabbos or not? So the particular rabbi who he asked said, yes, you're mechuyev to violate Shabbos. And a lot of the other Rabbanim Yerushalayim were very against it. They said, what do you mean? Like we said before, when he got his bris, he accepted all the mitzvahs, right? And he said, I'm going to keep Shabbos. And now you're going to tell him he has to violate Shabbos? Very strange. So they sent this question to the Binyan Sion. The Binyan Sion was the Rebbe of Rav Shamson Frohl Hirsch, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, the author of the Aruch HaNer. We quoted him before. And they said, what do you think about this question? He sided with the Rabbanim Yerushalayim who said that he should not violate Shabbos. And he brought a proof. He brought a proof from the fact that the Torah tells us that even before Matan Torah, at the stop called Mara, which was one of the first stops, that's where Moshe Rabbeinu threw the tree into the water because it was bitter and it turned sweet, so that they were there for a little while before they, moved towards Har Sinai. And the Torah says that they were given a few mitzvahs at that point. Shom sam lo chok mishpat v'sham niso. They were given a few mitzvahs, I think Shabbos, Kibud Aveim, and Paraduma. Okay, not the three you would have put together for a shidduch, but they got the mitzvah Shabbos before they were actually Jewish, if you think about it. So he said, you see from there that you can keep Shabbos even if you're not 100% on the way. So others say, well, okay, well, that was an exception. That was that was obviously not normal once the Torah was given. So then there's rules we have to play by. So this was a big tumult for a long time in
Shmuel Salant,
yeah.
But he wasn't there. He wasn't in Yerushalayim
And he wasn't happy with the decision. we'll leave the discussion at that. But some of the nafkaminas are what we said. Whether or not you would be Michal Shabbos for him, whether touching the wine would make the wine prohibited. There was another nafkamina I wanted to share with you, but I can't find it here right now. So that would be a similar question. If he's allowed to violate Shabbos, he has to violate Shabbos, but if he's not, if he has to keep Shabbos, then you wouldn't be able to ask him to do something on your behalf. Okay, all right, we'll leave the discussion at that, but that's what, yeah.
What is the basis of the, I've heard this many times, what is the basis that he has to violate Shabbos?
Because the only two mitzvos that a non-Jew, if he observes them, he's actually chayiv misa, are Shabbos and Talmud Torah. Okay, right? You're not supposed to teach a goy Torah. So what exactly is included in the Torah you're not allowed to teach him? I guess based on the joke, I don't know what they were learning. They might, you know, some say Torah Shabbosav is okay. But yeah, so those mitzvahs are considered unique to the Jewish people, and he doesn't have a share in them. So he'll do a perfunctory act just to break Shabbos, so to speak, so he's not subject to that.
What is the basis for that concept?
There's Pesukim, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the Daphne and Zion, I think, where it talks about the halachas of Bnei Noach. So it says the things that you... We always assume there's seven mitzvahs, right? But they're really more than seven mitzvahs. I once heard from one of these Noahide guys, and he said it's a misconception. It's actually about 206, wow, something like that. Because there's a lot of subsidiary mitzvahs, and if you really calculate it, it's more than just seven. But the number seven, even that number, is primarily mitzvahs that, it's the los ases. It's the los ases. It doesn't include mitzvahs ases. Right, it's don't do, for the most part. So the Gemara already says there's other mitzvahs that may be included. Maybe a guy has a mitzvah to have children also, okay. But it's not included on the seven because the seven is really just a very specific category of things. But the Gemara over there brings pesukim that indicate that Talmud Torah and Shabbos are special in the relationship between Hashem and Jewish people. Yeah.
Goyim also.
It looks like from the Rambam that he passes like Rabbi Yochanan that it's not good. So how could
No, the Rambam also paskins that if he hasn't had his tevila also, if he only had a bris, so he's a non-Jew, but he's a non-Jew who has to keep Shabbos. I mean, that's the catch over here. He's a non-Jew that has to keep Shabbos. Okay? I'll just mention briefly. We don't have time to get too far into it, but the Rashba says something surprising. The Rashba says that if he has his bris and he didn't go to the mikvah, he's nichnas ktsas bidas yehudis. He is somewhat entering the Jewish religion. So that's a very strange question. A very strange logic. Which one is it, right? Our Gemara says he's nothing. La'olam, as long as he didn't do mila and tefila, nachrihu. He's a non-Jew, and he has no mitzvah of berachas hamazon. So it's a little bit of a quirk that he has this Shabbos. I have to show one thing. This is the thing I was going to leave out before, but then I'll take the question, and Dr. Zona. The Rav Naftali Trupp, who is Rosh Yeshiva of the Chavetz Chaim's Yeshiva in Radin, suggested that maybe we could define this in-between status as looking at it like this. There's actually two categories. There's something called the Shem Yisrael and another thing called Kedushas Yisrael. Okay, there. Every Jew has both, but maybe we can bifurcate. To illustrate it, we have a similar thing when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. For example, we know that in the land surrounding Eretz Yisrael, on the other side of the Yarden, so the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, truma and meiser and shemitah, they don't apply 100%. Maybe midrabanan they apply, but they don't apply 100%. And that's why during shemitah, very often they'll get produce from Jordan, and that gets around a lot of issues. Okay, so Eretz Yisrael. You have the mitzvos, the agricultural mitzvos. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, other side of the Jordan, no. However, the Rambam says that there are certain halachos, egla arufa, appointing members of the Sanhedrin, or declaring Rosh Chodesh. These things can be done on the other side of the Yarden. So which one is it? Is the other side of the Yarden Eretz Yisrael or not? So we generally understand that, and Soloveitchik made a big deal about this principle, there's two things. There's something called the Shem Eretz Yisrael, and another thing called Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. When the Jewish people came back to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, they did not conquer all the lands that had originally been conquered when the Jews came from Mitzrayim, right? Most notably on the other side of the Jordan, right? There were a lot of people. When they came to Eretz Yisrael for the first time, you had 12 tribes. There were no 12 tribes when they came back. It was a very, very small group. The Jews were, Hashem was not happy with the fact that it was a very small group coming back to Eretz Yisrael. So they did not conquer all the lands that were originally conquered the first time the Jews entered Israel. So therefore, those lands, let's say on the other side of the Jordan, they have the name on the map, we'll call that Israel, but it doesn't mean it necessarily has the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So too, it could be that the Rajba means, if the guy had a bris milah, we'll call him Jewish, okay, but he doesn't have the Kedusha of Yisrael. Okay, that's a higher level. When the Aragmar says he's a Nachri, It means he's a Nachri insofar as that Kedusha. But he does have some status of Judaism, whereby we would say it's not a violation for him to keep Shabbos. Okay? It's, again, it's a little bit hard to, you know, split the hairs like this, but there may be some in-between concept. Yeah?
If someone wants to become a ger, before you or anything like that, he has to learn some things about Judaism. So how does that get around the issue of learning Talmud Torah?
Good. Okay, so some say it's okay when he's learning for the purpose of converting, right? But again, there's different levels. There's Torah Shabbosav, there's Torah Shabbalpeh. I'm going to leave it to the Gaber's professionals, but some things are okay, some things
it's
not. If you're,
it's like an education.
It's not clear that it's a blanket issur. You know, if your coworker asks you, you know, so what's this Passover holiday all about, and you tell him, well, we left Egypt, it's okay. You know, it's not quite as far-reaching as, you know, as the simple meaning of the words. But again, primarily when they're learning, it serves another purpose also. When you're teaching them Torah, you're teaching them because that's the metric by which we're going to ultimately know whether or not this person is ready to convert, right? Part of the process is, you know, we'll interview the candidate and see if they are ready to keep Shabbos, at least on a basic level. So for the purposes of the education, we have a lot more wiggle room, so to speak. Okay?
Yeah. I'm a little confused about these things what's a mitzvah that a guy can or should or shouldn't do, etc. There are mitzvahs, positive mitzvahs, which they do anyway, but they are not doing it for the sake of following the Torah. Mm-hmm. Kibud avoyim, for example, they may respect their parents, but not because
and they're definitely obligated to respect their parents.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And etc. So it's sounds to me like a very difficult question of what's a Torah mitzvah, what's not a Torah mitzvah.
So I don't know if this will answer your question, but the Rambam in the 8th parak of Hilchos Malachim, where he talks about the laws of a non-Jew, he says that a non-Jew can go to heaven. Okay, a non-Jew can get Olam Haba if he satisfies the requirements of Chasidei Umos HaOlam. So we use that term, you know, that was chosen by Yad Vashem to refer to the non-Jews who helped save people during World War II. But the Rambam's definition, the Rambam would obviously hold that those people are very righteous as well. But when he's talking about, you know, what satisfies the requirement that he's describing, he says that they have to keep the seven mitzvos. Mm-hmm. But he's very particular to say they have to keep the mitzvos with the intention that I'm doing it because Hashem commanded Moshe to tell us, the non-Jewish people, to do these mitzvos. If he would just come up with on his own and say, you know what, I don't know, he eats matzah because, I don't know.
He likes it.
Well, I think there's a larger market of Catholics who eat Manischewitz matzah than Jews, okay? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot more of them, and they do their sacraments, and they do mm-hmm. this, right? So if he wants to eat matzah because that's what, you know, Yashka said he should do, you know, so he's not going to own the hava for that, okay? But if he eats matzah because he wants to help, you know, because this is what helps remember, you know, the miracles that Hashem did for the Jews in Mitzrayim, so he'll get credit for that. If he refrains from eating Avraham and Achai because Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded Har Sinai to convey that to the non-Jews, the Rambam says he's a Chasidei Umos HaOlam.
I assume that the average Chinese person doesn't even know that there is such a thing as a Torah, etc. Yeah.
So I can't guarantee he's going to go on Hava, but he didn't ask me, so I don't know.
But the first one mentioned Dr. Jenner and a few others as people who were definitely going to Olam Haba.
Who?
The guy who invented the smallpox vaccine. Was that
okay,
Dr. Jenner,
okay.
Right?
So, but he can still respect his parents and so on. And
polio.
Good things. So.
Okay, I'm just telling you what the Rambam says. The Rambam says you need to do these things. The Rambam says about Jews. Okay, this is a surprise to people. But the Rambam says you don't go to Olam Haba unless you accept, you know, the 13 principles of faith, the Ani Mamans. He says everyone's got to study them because that's your ticket to Olam Haba. So open up your siddur and review the Ani Mamans. Okay, let's go weiter. The Gemara says on the second line of the wide lines, Nashim avadim ketanim menim mizamin aleihem. So the next line of the Mishnah was that women, avadim, and ketanim are not included in a zimun. In this case, avadim refers to Eved Knani, a non-Jewish slave who was taken in by the Jewish people for, you know, he might have been captured as a prisoner of war. He might have been purchased on the slave market. But as we know, an Eved Knani has a status, has the same obligations in mitzvos as a woman does. He is also partially Jewish. Right. Otherwise, that's a different category. But that's why we would need to explain that even though he has mitzvos and Eved Knani has the bench, Eved Knani has the bench. Right. And nevertheless, he's not included in the Zimun, as we saw earlier in the parak. I'm Rabbi Yossi. Katan hamuto ba'arisa mezamnen alav. So Biosi says that a katan who is in his crib, okay, sounds like even a little baby, but a very young child, mezamnalav, you can include him in a zimun. Okay, we have to be a little more specific soon what we're talking about, but there is some status, notwithstanding what the Mishnah said, and which is why the Gemara asks, "Vatna noshim avadim ketanim ein mezamna lehem." How does Rabbi Yossi say that the katan in the crib has any status for zimun if the Mishnah says not like that? So Gemara answers, "Who the amr Rabbi Shuben Levi? The amr Rabbi Shuben Levi. Afal pisha amru katan hamutov arisa ein mezamna lav. Even though a very young child, our Mishnah says you cannot include him in a zimun. Aval osin also sniff la'asara. You can make him number 10." Okay, the word sniff means a subsidiary or a some sort of connection, meaning you'll connect him to 10. Certainly, what Rashi says over here is that, sniff lasar, Rashi said over here, sniff chibur lezimun asar, you'll attach him, you'll connect him. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a big debate in the Rishonim over here, what exactly are we referring to? Are we referring to only one? Is it a maximum of one? You could definitely read it like that because it says, osin oso sniff lasara. You can make him number 10, which could imply that if there were two katanim or three katanim, that wouldn't work. Okay, but other Rishonim go in between. Some say to the opposite extreme, that as long as you have six gedolim, all the Gemara meant to say was, as long as the katanim are the minority, that's sufficient. But I think most importantly for our purposes is that it teaches that the Mishnah requires three when you have your core three for sure. The core three has to start with gedolim. You can't have two bar mitzvah boys and one 12-year-old. Okay, that's what the Gemara seems to be saying. But once you already have nine, or whatever number it is, far beyond three, so then you can just add the katan as number 10. Okay?
Is that how we pass it?
Yeah, but
yes and no. Okay? Let's say yes, b'shas adchak. Okay, but again, we're talking about adding a tenth person to say the Shem Hashem. Okay? When we're done with the whole sugya, then hopefully we'll look in the Mishnah Berurah. There's a lot of sticky... Okay, all right, so we're way ahead of ourselves. Let's give it a few minutes, okay? There's some fun things to get to before we get there. But this is obviously the basis, okay? And the next question someone's going to ask me is, what if he's holding a Sefer Torah? Okay, so hold on. Okay. So we are on the fifth wide line. Meisvei. I'm sorry. Va'om Rabbi Shuben Levi, Tish of Evid Mitzdarfin. Rabbi Shuben Levi, just like he says that a katan can be number 10, 9 plus 1 Evid also works. Again, it's as much as we can take from it right now is just benching. Okay? Meisvei, Meisav Rebbe Eliezer, Shenechnas Lebeis HaKnesses. V'lo Matza Asara. Rebbe Eliezer was once going to shul, and he showed up, and there weren't enough people there for a minyan. V'shichrer Avdo, and he happened to have his Evid with him, and he freed him on the spot. V'shlimo La'asara. We could use this how with the Zman Mincha sometimes, okay? And so he got stuck. He didn't have a tenth man for the minyan, so he freed his slave. So Gemara says what? Gemara says, Shichrer in, lo Shichrer lo. What should we take from that story? That the tenth man, the Evid, could only be counted after the fact, after he had freed him. What did Rabbi Shuben Levi say a moment ago? If you have nine plus an Evid, it's good. Then why did Rabbi Lezer have to free his slave if he had nine plus the Evid? That should have been enough. Sounds like you need to be free. So Gemara says, Trey Itzrichu. Really, they needed two. There's actually eight people. Eight people in shul, which means Rabbi Lezer had two of them with him. So what did he do? Shichra Chad v'nafik b'chad. He freed one of those two, and the other Eved remained as the number 10 man. Okay? So we have the story down. It's consistent with Rabbi Yishuv and Levi. Sounds like we can still create a minion when it's 9 plus 1 Eved. Again, the Eved has a Jewish status to him. He has a bris milah. And he keeps lots and lots of mitzvos, not all of them, but he has to keep lots of mitzvos. Ask the Gemara, Vehechi Avid Hachi, a little bit of a sidebar over here, but a very important question. The Rav Yehuda said, Kol HaMeshacher Avdo Over Ba'aseh, anyone who frees his slave is in violation of an aseh. Can you get the papers that are in the photocopy machine, please? What's that? Yeah, I want to share some sources on this. The Gemara says, we have a pasuk. To back it up, kol meshacher avdo over basay. If you free a slave, then you are in violation of a mitzvah saseh. What is that mitzvah saseh? Shenemar la'olam bahem tavodu. The full pasuk says, v'snachaltem osam levnechem acharechem. You shall bequeath your servants from one generation to the next, l'reshes achuza, as a continuous heritage. La'olam bahem tavodu, you shall always enslave them. U'bachechem in Israel, ishbachev lo sedo befarach. But your brothers, meaning a fellow Jew, a full-fledged Jew, you can never enslave him the way that you enslave an Eved Kenani. Okay? So I'm sorry, I didn't clarify. Because the Eved is that close to being Jewish, right? When you free him, then he takes on the full status. Okay, I mean, I should have said that before. What you accomplish over here by freeing him is that he's all set up for success. The only problem is that he remains in the possession of the master who controls him. The moment that he's freed, could be he has to go to the mikveh again, but when he's freed, he then takes on a full Jewish status.
But this is an Eved Kenani we're talking about? So, by freeing him, he's still...
He had a bris. He may have been my servant for 10 years. He would be a servant for 10 years, and he's lighting Hanukkah candles. Well, that's a good question. Does he light women archiving Hanukkah candles? But that's because of Afinos. He's eating matzah at the Seder every single year. Okay, and Eved Kenani eats matzah at the Seder every single year. Okay, and he's not chayv in every mitzvah, but he's for the most part a Jew. So when I free him, then he takes on a full Jewish status.
But you're saying for the most part. So is he further along than when we started with here with the person who got...
Yes, absolutely. He's done both of these. When I say he's further along, he has the same mitzvahs that a woman has.
So he had a bris, and he was told.
Right. I didn't say it. I'm sorry, I didn't speak this out before. If you have an Eved who refuses this, he says, I didn't ask to be Jewish, then I believe the halachas, you have to get rid of him. He cannot be your servant. He can't live in your house. I mean, the Chacham over here, the reason why Chazal instituted, or the Torah, the reason the Torah has some of these guidelines is that your help at home should be people who support the same ideals that you believe in. You shouldn't have someone at home who's taking care of the kids, who's cooking the food, who, you know, isn't consistent with the Jewish home. So he has to keep the same as that his the woman in the house has to keep. The owner has to enforce it, but if the master for whatever reason doesn't go ahead with the partial conversion process of giving him a bris and introducing him to the mitzvos, then I don't remember exactly. Forgive me. The Gemara Yivama says after a year you got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
There's a time limit, right? That's what the Gemara says. Okay. Machlokes Hanaim exactly what the process is, but again, it's to enforce the fact that everyone who's in your home should be consistent with Nowadays,
yeah.
So there's no prohibition to have a non-Jew, but you have to have certain safeguards. It's true. A non-Jew can ruin things in your kitchen, and he can do things at home which you wouldn't want him to do. But in the ideal that the Torah has in mind, you know, we talk about slavery. Okay, you know, we don't like slavery. We had Emancipation Proclamation. We freed all the slaves. But whatever the concept of slavery was in Yiddishkeit, it wasn't simply subjugation of human rights. It was in order to create an environment at home that was as reinforcing of the lifestyle in the Jewish home as it could be. So but again, there is no it doesn't say anywhere that you're not allowed to hire non-Jews to work in your house. You just have to have the right parameters in place to make sure that it's.
We're getting to Tevi Abdo also.
No, not today. Okay. So the Gemara says there's a prohibition. La'olam mehem tavodu. The Torah says, they shall forever be your servants. So how did he free the slave? Answers the Gemara, L'dvar mitzvah shiny. This is the Dvar mitzvah. He was getting credit for Tefillah B'tzibor, right? We had a minion over here. Yep. Gemara says, wait a minute, mitzvah b'baveri. What kind of mitzvah is that? Mitzvah b'baveri, that's no good. So he answers, mitzvah derabim shiny. A public mitzvah is different. A mitzvah that impacts the whole group, that's a different story. Okay, this is these three lines are so loaded. There's so much here. We could spend the next 3 weeks just talking about these lines, but we'll try to limit it to about 15 minutes. So what I share with you over here is primarily, I know maybe it's a little bit overloaded over here also, but if you turn to page 13, the comments of the Rishonim in Gittin. Gittin is where this story appears as well. But the Rishonim are struggling with what exactly this means, right? Why should this answer not make sense? There's a mitzvah that you must always maintain your slaves. There's a mitzvah to daven. Okay. Are those mitzvahs really created equal? What would you say? Right. Torah says explicitly, hold on to the slave. Tefillah b'tzibor, pashup shadas is derabanan. Right? Kaddish, kedusha, all the things you can do with a minion, chazaras hashatz, those are derabanan. So the first question is, you know, to just say, oh yeah, it's a mitzvah derabim. Okay, so there's a lot of people, but we're still only doing a derabanan. How could that justify violating the Isser Doraisa with freeing the slave? So the first answer is from the Ramban. If you look at the top right of page 13, a brilliant, brilliant answer. Hadam rinan mitzvah shiny. Yeah. Hadam rinan mitzvah shiny. Top right of page 13. That which our Gemara answers that a mitzvah is different. Timihani. I am baffled by this answer. Just because there's a mitzvah to daven the minyan, so we can just knock off a mitzvah to say in the Torah? So he answers like this. Efshar, maybe. Shelo amra Torah li olam bem tavodu, elo mishum shelo yitain lahem matnos chinam. The only reason we prohibit you from freeing your slaves is because you're not allowed to give a non-Jew matnos chinam. Okay? Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Kenyan dichsiv, bagoyim lo sechanem. It's a Pasuk in Torah that says lo sechanem. The Gemara of Odezara has three interpretations of that Pasuk. Lo sitin lahem chen, don't give them charm, which means you're not supposed to compliment a non-Jew. Not going into that right now, but that's on the books. Gemara of Odezara, Daf Chav, check it out. Maybe one day we'll learn of Odezara. That's one prohibition. Another prohibition is lo sitin lahem chania bekarka. You're not allowed to give them any real estate in Eretz Yisrael. This is one of the reasons why the Heter Mechira of Shemitah is so controversial. Okay. Because who said you're allowed to sell the Holy Land to a non-Jew? Torah says you can't. So how we get around it, okay, we'll talk about that maybe in 5 years. But the third prohibition is you're not supposed to give a free gift to a guy. Okay, now what does that mean you shouldn't give a free gift? It really means free. I mean, if you have a coworker and you bring him your schnapps that you're trying to get rid of before Pesach or something like that, so why do you give a coworker a gift? Because you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You know that it's good for your relationship. Yes. If you get something for your neighbor who takes in the mail when you're away, so we encourage having good relations. But if there's really no legitimate reason for it, just happy birthday. So the Gemara says it's not okay. So there's a prohibition to give free gifts to non-Jews. So the Ramban says, maybe this halacha that you're not allowed to free a slave is it's related to the prohibition of giving a gift. So he says, well, that would mean, let's say the Eved Kenani buys himself out of slavery. He wins a lottery. Now he has enough money to free himself. So that's not giving him a free gift. I'm getting an exchange, what I'm losing. And not only that, the Ramban says, maybe when the reason I'm freeing him has a distinct mitzvah purpose to it, so that's not giving him a free gift. What Rabbi Elazar was doing was he got something in exchange that he really wanted to have a minyan. So it's not the pshat that a doraisa is beaten by a drabanan. No, on the contrary. The isra doraisa doesn't even really exist in this case because since it's not a free gift, it's something which actually benefits me, I'm allowed to do so. Okay? The reason why that's such a chiddush is because the Ramban is giving like a philosophy behind the pasuk and paskening based on that, which is not always the way we usually approach pasuk. Okay? That's answer number one. The second answer he gives, if you look in V'yesh Lomar, right after the underlines, V'yesh Lomar Nami, Enoch Nami, the Asya Hai Mitzvah V'docha Seisha B'Torah. He says, you know what? I take it back. Maybe Tefillah B'Tzibur is so great, it can even, supersede a Mitzvah D'Oraisa. And brings a riot from a Gemara early in the Masechta says that if Hashem shows up to Shul and the minion hasn't gotten there yet, Miyad Hu Kois. Hashem is immediately angry. Right. Okay, now that doesn't mean if we're struggling because everyone davened at the plug minion, okay? But it means if there's a scheduled minion and people just nonchalantly, stroll in at 7:05 instead of 7, so God's already waiting there taking attendance, okay? But you see that the Torah gives a very, very, very significant, very great significance to Tefillah B'Tzibur, and maybe it is raised to a higher priority that could even match up with an Isser D'Oraisa, which is also, that's a big Kiddush. The Ramban, I'm just going to give a quick summary for the interest of time. The Ran, which is the scan on the left, says, you know what, I'm looking at this Gemara, and my conclusion has to be that this mitzvah saseh is not really a full-fledged mitzvah saseh. It just can't be that Tefillah B'Tzibur is going to beat out this halacha that you can't free the slave, unless the essay is not an essay gomor. Okay, not a full-fledged essay. What does that mean? A few suggestions could be it's a drabanan. Could be even this pasuk. We read it as a din d'oraisa. Maybe it's an asmachta. Maybe there's a drabanan. You're not allowed to free the slaves. But if you want to free the slave, the Torah is okay with it. So maybe it's a drabanan. Alternatively, the Meiri says this is not a mitzvah that is relevant to everybody. the prohibition to free your slave can only apply to someone who owns a slave. Is there a mitzvah to buy a slave? No, no mitzvah to buy. If you have a slave, you're not supposed to free him. So the Meiri posits that a mitzvah, we have basis for this, a mitzvah that is not universally applicable does not have the same teeth to it. Because a mitzvah that everyone has to perform and everyone is bound by, so that's going to have full power and you can't just knock it off. But a mitzvah which by definition doesn't always apply and doesn't apply to everybody, it has a slightly weaker status. My personal favorite answer, if you turn to the second side, comes from the Sefer HaChinuch. Okay? If you thought we were not politically correct up until now, fasten your safety belt. Okay, at the top, Sefer HaChinuch in Parshas Bahar, Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, in every mitzvah that the Sefer HaChinuch counts, at one point he begins Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, where he talks about the philosophy behind it, the root behind the mitzvah. On the mitzvah of not freeing slaves. Okay, of owning slaves, freeing slaves. Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, L'fisha Am Yisrael Hei Mivchar HaMin HaAnoshi, since the Jewish people are the select, elevated, supreme, cream of the crop of the human species, and they were created to recognize their creator and to serve him. And therefore, because they are royalty. Jews are royalty. So it is appropriate for royalty to have others serving them. Okay, and you know what? If we didn't license you to have slaves from the non-Jews, you'd have to hire a Jew. And then that Jew is not going to be able to do with complete freedom and flexibility, his responsibility. So therefore, once we can assure that they will not be a negative influence in our house, we make sure that they're not serving Avodah Zarah. As I said before, we got to get them on the program a little bit to be somewhat Jewish. So then it's better to have slaves of non-Jews, because if you have slaves who are Jewish, right, if you don't have the opportunity to have a non-Jew, the result is you're going to enslave Jews to do work for you, and that would not be appropriate because they should have people serving them. Okay, now skip to the one paragraph. Umiyos Yisod HaMitzvah. Miyos Yisod HaMitzvah, third paragraph. Because the mitzvah is, Kedei Sheyir B'Bnei Adam Avodas Borom Baruch Hu, what do we say the purpose of the mitzvah is? To increase mitzvah performance in general. Have a slave so you can do more mitzvos. Hitiru Chacham Zuchon L'Vracha Lavar Al Mitzvah Zu B'chol Eis Shebitul Mitzvah Zu Yeh Gorim Letzacheres. So it follows that when freeing the slave allows you to do another mitzvah, so you're really being consistent with the whole point of the mitzvah, right? In the case of where I'm short for the minyan and I need the 10th man, so you'll tell me, what do you mean? I have to hold on to the slave. Yeah, but why do you have to hold on to the slave? To allow you to do more mitzvahs. Now the opportunity presents itself for me to do a mitzvah by freeing the slave. So there's nothing wrong with freeing the slave because the thrust of the mitzvah is still being accomplished. You're still getting the mitzvah, and the whole reason you own the slave is to do more mitzvahs. Sometimes if you get more mitzvahs by freeing the slave, that's also good. Okay? Brilliant. But also very interesting that the philosophy is guiding, you know, the practical halacha.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. My response to you is like this: the Radvaz was asked the following question. It was a guy in jail. Jew was in jail, and the people told him, "We'll give you one day a year where you can be freed to go to shul and daven." Did we discuss this once?
Yeah.
So the guy said, "Oh, maybe I should go on Yom Kippur. Maybe I should go hear the Megillah on Purim." Radvaz said, "No, tomorrow. Go to Minyan." He said, first of all, just because they're being nice now doesn't mean they're going to be nice in October when it's Yom Kippur time. But he also said, this is Ein Mavir Al Mitzvah. If the mitzvah presents itself now, again, your logic is 100% right. But if the mitzvah presents itself right now, then you got to do it and go to shul. And maybe go to shul over here is also. I once asked Reb Chaim, can I ask you the following question? Mishnah Berurah says that, that let's say a person, they know that their Shmoneh Esrei is longer than the Tzibur Shmoneh Esrei, and they're not going to finish in time to answer Kedusha. But they're holding by Gal Yisrael like everybody else. Should they, A, just daven and know that they're going to miss it later, or pause, sit around for a few minutes, wait till they're up to Chazar Sashatz, answer Kedusha, and then begin your Shmoneh Esrei? So Mishnah Berurah says that he thinks, he's not 100% sure, but he thinks maybe he should wait and be able to answer Kedusha. So I asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, what about this Radvaz? Ein Mavir Al Mitzvos, if the mitzvah of Shmoneh Esrei presents itself right now, mm-hmm. I don't need to worry about what's going to happen later. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll miss Kedusha. But so I should daven right away. And he said, you're right. The Chazon Ish also was very surprised by the Mishnah Berurah. Mm-hmm. I love you should daven along Shmoneh Esrei. Parenthetically, though, Rav Schechter, nowadays I think everything's on Zoom. But it used to be, you know, he's in YU all week. And then Friday, he would go into the OU offices and pasken all the shilohs that came up, you know, in kashrus over the course of the week. It could be they do it over Zoom now. I don't know if he goes into the office. But every Friday morning, he'd have to daven early at a quick minyan to be able to go. So he said what he would do is he would just get to shul 10 minutes earlier. And when they were in Karbanos, he was in Pesukah D'Zimra. When he was in Pesukah D'Zimra, he was in Birchas Kriyas Shema and so forth. So by the time he finished Monesra, he was able to have the best of both worlds and also answer Kedusha.
Oh,
so that's
a long tachan. Rabbi Leibowitz said he starts long tachan, and next week he starts the next one.
Yeah. Okay, there's only...
very amusing.
Okay, we have 1 minute left, so let's just...
Why don't we consider the fact that if you free him, he becomes a full-fledged Jew and therefore does mitzvahs?
So I would say the same logic. As long as he's not at that point, so he doesn't have any advantage. Meaning, by your logic, we should all be encouraged to free all of our slaves, right? But that's circular, because then we're not going to have any slaves who can serve us, right?
So that doesn't fit with the flip side, but it...
He's saying if the mitzvah presents itself right now. The first two answers. The first two answers say that really the right thing to do is hold on to your slave. Because freeing a slave is giving a bonus to a person who you're not supposed to give a bonus to. But if it ends up being a self-serving bonus because now I can do a mitzvah that I couldn't do before, then it's not freeing him for no reason. It's constructive. It's productive. Okay. Yeah.
Hold on.
One second. Alan, yeah, go ahead.
A little confused. Before we talk about a tinok, that if you had tinok for 10 is okay, tinok for 9 is okay, as long as it's more than 3, or more than 6,
Let's go, or maybe 9 plus. It could be he's only good for the number 10.
Okay, that's what I was saying. Why wouldn't the Evid be good for first Evid, second Evid? The same reason.
Right, so good point. So the Gemara said the only thing that we're ready to give a stamp of approval for right now is when the Evid is the 10th man. So that's why he had to free the other slave. But you're right. I put it out there, the kid, the baby, I put that out there as it's up for debate, but apparently Evid, we max out at 9 plus 1. Okay, but that's a good point. That even though the Gemara seems to talk about them one after another, it may be that there's... I would tell you what you're presenting is a raya that we should take the Gemara literally when it comes to the baby and cap it at 9 plus 1, which we said is a simple reading because it says, osin oso snif lasar, which is singular, only one. I agree with you 100%. That's a strong rye. Yeah.
I didn't remember that if you have two partners on a slave.
And
one of them frees the slave, then the other
good.
One.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
right. So the Gemara says, we'll end with this. If for some reason you had someone who was a half slave, half free man. The example is where partners own the slave, one of them decides to free him, the other one does not. So then we force the second owner to free that slave because the guy can't live in limbo. Can't get married. It's kind of like an agona.
So how could the first guy free the slave? Unless
what was the reason for that? It's a good question. Yeah. It wasn't because of Minyan.
Yeah.
Maybe he paid him off.
Okay.
Well, Davin Marv, have a good Shabbos. Thank you very much. Thank you. Is it open? Are we done, Mara?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You were
mentioning at the beginning, right? About
you
two and the guy.
Yes. Thank you.
What I hear, there was a classic joke in Hungary about when many Jews were converting.